Now, to review a little bit what we've done this week, there was a kind of a logical progression in my mind of how we got to where we are today, which probably wasn't obvious to anybody else. But I thought that I would tell you, because our discussion today kind of draws a little bit on some of the things that we have done previously, thought that I would lay out for you just what this is intended to produce this week. On Tuesday, we discussed, first of all, the fact that ideas about males and females, roles and relationships, vary by society, and that external historical events pressure society to make different cultural adaptations, and this causes changes in the ideas about males and females. Then on Wednesday, we saw through a very brief, sketchy look at some of the ideas of George Herbert Mead, how we as individuals are shaped by our particular culture, especially through language and symbolism, to become unique selves. As we grow and develop, we take society's point of view within ourselves, and then we become part of the process then of shaping other people that we come in contact with. Also, on Wednesday, we reviewed some recent studies that seem to indicate that males and females tend to develop different psychological patterns and expressions of themselves. This isn't entirely, totally true for males and females. There are some overlaps, but there is a tendency for this differing kind of development to take place. Then on Thursday, we discussed the fact that even our religious ideas about God and about how men and women fit within the religious organization are shaped somewhat, at least, by our culture. And yesterday, we saw that everyday patterns of behavior, such as the development of friendships, are not identical between the sexes in our society. Now, today, we're going to discuss some of the images that are prevalent in North America. I want to give a footnote before we start the discussion. On the sociological perspective, this grows out of Mead's theory that no two people develop exactly alike because each of us has our own varying experiences, beginning with the moment of birth. Even identical twins are not born at exactly the same moment. A mother who has twins to care for tends to pick up one first and then the other. The riding in the car, one is looking out of one side of the car and the other one's looking out of the other, and so on. So nobody's background is exactly the same. The greatest differences, of course, are found in cultures that are different from one another. Yet it is also true that each of us, as we are socialized and take on the attitudes of our own families and our own cultures, assume that ours is the right, true, natural way of doing things. Only as we come into contact with the wider world do we discover that there are different and very legitimate ways of doing the same thing. When I was a child, the earliest remembrance I have of this is the fact that in my family, we were taught that you went to bed clean every night. You washed, brushed your teeth, and so on, before you went to bed. We would every so often go to visit some relatives, and my cousins grew up with the exactly opposite point of view. They just fell into bed when it was time, but got up bright and early and made sure they were clean for the beginning of the day. When I was a very small child, that was a little hard for me to get used to. And nobody ever talked about it. It was just one of those patterns that I discovered. And that has happened to me throughout my life, and I'm sure it has to you too. You come in contact with someone who does something different, and at first it seems very strange. But then you see, well, they accomplished the same thing. They just have a different way of going about it. And talking in introductory sociology classes with college students who are trying to be roommates for the first time with somebody who comes from a different background, and it's very interesting as they begin to adapt to one another, the things they notice that are different, and husbands and wives too, in trying to establish a new family out of two varying backgrounds. Do you celebrate Christmas on Christmas Eve, or do you celebrate on Christmas morning? You know, that kind of thing. You need to sort those things out. There isn't a way of doing things. Now, the sociologist does not say that every human pattern is equivalent to every other one. I personally, for example, think that human cannibalism is morally wrong. But the sociological perspective is that, except in the case of mentally or emotionally ill people, human behavior can always be understood within the context in which it develops. Many, if not most, misunderstandings, arguments, hostility, warfare, according to the sociologist, come about in our world because individuals or groups are either not able or are not willing to look at things from the other guy's point of view. In other words, people who act or think or express themselves differently from the way I do are not crazy or evil or stupid or whatever. They have learned differently, either because people taught them differently or on the basis of their experience and observation, they put it together differently in their own mind. Now, if we can discuss our differences from one another and mutually explore the basis on which we have created our attitudes, sometimes we can alter one another's opinions, and other times, at least, we can agree to disagree. This means, however, that we have to be prepared to fully examine our own take-it-for-granted, and that is not at all easy to do. So, this morning, as we talk about images and stereotypes, I want to ask you to keep three things in mind. First of all, we did not create our own ideas all by our little lonesome. Secondly, we were capable of learning our ideas in the first place, and we are capable of unlearning them if it turns out that those ideas are no longer accurate to the surroundings. At least if we examine the context, we can have an idea about whether our attitudes are legitimate or not. And then third, and most importantly, the fact that a specific idea is a problem for one or more of us does not mean that it is for everyone, and vice versa. Something that doesn't bother me at all, I can't assume it doesn't bother anybody, or it shouldn't bother anybody, okay? In other words, you can't take it for granted that your own point of view is the standard natural one, because it isn't. It's standard and natural for you and maybe your group. So this is a plea to be as understanding and as tolerant of one another's varying attitudes as is possible. Now, in our society, there are many images and stereotypes about males and females. This begins at birth, you know, the whole pink and blue business. Not every society divides babies into pink girls and blue boys. There were some psychologists who did a study called the Baby X Study. And this is described in a videotape that I show to my classes. And it's always really interesting to see the kids' reactions to this. In this study, the study director had a baby, a small child of about 7, 8, 9 months. And the subjects, the adults who were brought into the study, were told that this was a study that was trying to determine how adults interacted with small children and how the small children responded to adults that they had never seen before. And they chose a child of about 7, 8, 9 months because that was, for this particular child, it was before it got to the point where it was making strange with other people. And so then what they did, they took each adult one at a time, brought it in to the baby, who was dressed in a sort of some kind of a pants and top outfit, which was not gender specific. You couldn't tell by looking if this was a little boy or a little girl. They had three toys there. One was a little football, one was a rag doll, and one was a sort of a rattle thing. Okay? And for each adult, they would say, the researcher would say, I would like to introduce you to Johnny, or Jenny, or this baby. In one case, the child would be identified as a boy, in another case as a girl, and in another case there was no clue given at all. And the researcher would say, now would you just play with this child for a few minutes so that we can observe the reactions? There were the three toys, one a boy toy, one a girl toy, and one a nothing toy. And guess what happened? When the baby was introduced as Johnny, the person invariably picked up the football. Here, Johnny, would you like to play? Would you like to hold this? When it was Jenny, invariably the rag doll. And when there was no clue given, invariably it was the rattle. And it was the same child. The same baby was used all the way through this experiment. So, the researcher then took this to mean that the stereotypes that we have about what boys and girls like to do, how they like to play, from very small onward, are set already in people's minds. And that we just automatically respond in these kinds of ways. And yet, looking at it from the baby's point of view, as the child grows older, we know from observation that some little boys like to play with dolls and some little girls like to play with boy toys, you know. In families in which these images are not so specific, the children can decide as they grow up what they like to do, or at least they can experience a variety of things. But in some families in which the images are very much set, the little girl who might like to play with trucks and so on doesn't have that opportunity, and vice versa. So, in other words, according to the researchers, we do begin at an early age to pattern children in certain directions. How do you think about all this? Do you think that it makes any difference? Do you think this is true?
I've been thinking, trying to remember the author that wrote all those books. It's gone up, spoke to, her name starts with P. And ever since I heard her speak on the subject, why, I've never sent out a card to a new baby for it's a girl or it's a boy, because I think that's the wrong approach to start out. They're a person.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I enjoy being a girl, so that wouldn't bother me. And I do think that is a general tendency, but most families have a mixture of boys and girls, and I think that kind of takes care of itself.
Okay.
However, I do think people, you know, if it's a girl, they do divide what we think are girl boys, and if it's a boy, they do divide things that they think are cute. But I do think children themselves kind of, you know, break that pattern. Some families have all girls, and I don't know.
I was raised with all girls. When we raised our children, we had just one boy. But we decided that our children would be the girls that have trucks and cars, mm-hmm. and little animals, and things, and all of their dolls. The boy played keep riding away along with him. It was just playtime. Mm-hmm. Our children all came, we had 5 and 6 years, and we decided to have their shirts with the same. And so we did some of those.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, reading time and bedtime.
Somebody over here wants to say something.
Well, my son was 3,
he couldn't understand why when we went to Sunday school, the girls got to wear something different. And he did. I mean, he had to wear the same kind of thing. He still wore one pant. And that's what they wore all week. Because when they went to Sunday school, they wore dresses. And so he asked me if he could wear a dress. Well, I didn't think that anyone at our church was ready for that. But I did let him wear a dress at home for a little while, mm-hmm. until he realized how awkward wearing a dress was and didn't wear a dress or didn't want to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But having three sisters, he always was around dolls and dishes and that kind of thing. And they were always around trucks and cars. And so I think they got a mixture. But that was the one.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I was stereotyping that I didn't even realize.
Mm-hmm.
The church wasn't. I wasn't ready for him to wear a dress either. I really expected him to be a boy and do boy things. I would have been disappointed that he
didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Back there.
When I grew up, I think that in the old days, people were more rigid. A boy was a boy, he played football, and a girl was a girl, she played with dolls. But if there was any mix of that, that person was considered an outcast or a disgrace.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's partly why some of those images are still prevalent in our society, even though there are a lot of people who no longer really hold as firmly to that idea that we should be totally in opposite sorts of.
Why should baby girls wear pink? Why should baby boys wear blue? That sort of, why?
Well, the psychologist who did the study said that the reason that we have developed that is because in primitive societies, everybody can see who's a boy and who's a girl right off. But in our society, we cover up the only way you're gonna know. And that gives us a clue, then, by closure.
Well, that's true in the primitive society, too. It was important to have a son.
Mm-hmm.
And to be let it know that you have a son.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jim?
Well, I mean, being stereotyped, stereotypes are bad. I mean, most people, that's bad. On the other hand, we simply say, well, a stereotype is a nasty generalization. We live by generalizations. We have to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the world isn't branded. Men and women aren't branded. So it's understandable, I think. You know, you're told this is a boy, give him a football to play with, because all your life searching, who plays football? Even in our modern enlightened world, men play football. Girls don't play football. The doll thing, of course, is more mixed. We're changing that. And the other thing is, not all an expert in it, but I remember reading a study recently. One of the important things in a healthy psychological development is having a clear sense of who you are as a sexual creature.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are screwed up sexually, mm-hmm. aren't sure what they are, can be screwed up in life. So that it's not
pun
that
intended.
Want, I think most of us see the benefits in giving people more choices. I think most everyone agrees that this is better for people and more things to choose from. Not everything's rigid. But at the same time, we have to recognize, if we assume there really are differences between men and women, not surprising that in certain ways, boys and girls develop in certain ways, and that is, you can say that society reinforces certain tendencies that might be their natural.
Okay.
And the trick is letting people have a healthy sense of identity, know who they are, without rigidly saying, now you're a boy, you must never play with a doll, or and you must not show emotional identity.
The question then becomes, if the stereotypes help us to identify ourselves as male and female, and if that is important for healthy psychological development, does it mean that being a female means that you have to be comfortable wearing a frilly dress? Does it mean that being a female is related to the kind of toys you play with? Does it mean that being a female means you should be quiet and a follower, and so on? And this is all where our society, because it has been in transition, it's not all that clear right now which of the traditional kinds of images still fit the sort of society that we're developing, and which of them are no longer necessary.
I think the tragedy has been that we have equated maleness and femaleness with choices. And we have said females will do this and males will do this. And when we start equating those kinds of things, we get into trouble. And I guess we notice this when young women are at about junior high age and they are no longer encouraged in mathematics and they lob off there, so all the boys are encouraged to continue in that area, and we come up with the, and that is borne out in that study, so that is what has happened. Notice how many young women say, I can't do math, and it will relate right back to that junior high age almost every time.
Mm-hmm.
But don't tests show there are real differences between males and the girls at that age do better on verbal tests, boys do better on math tests.
I mean, that's right.
The question, again, are there real differences in this, or is this purely a social factor?
I don't think
it's up to them.
Well, the most recent study that I have read was about a week before last, in which someone who's doing hormone testing has come out with the principle that the level of testosterone in the individual has something to do with the kinds of mental qualities that lead to a difference in mathematical ability. However, the fact that perhaps the majority of young boys would do better on math and the majority of young girls would do better on English or verbal kinds of things has in the past led us to think that boys should be pushed and encouraged in one direction because it's assumed that that's their natural sort of field, and girls should be pushed in another direction because that's their natural. Without, what we're coming to today, I think, in educational circles is more trying to help the individual find out which direction is my skill leading me towards, you know, to give all children the possibility of developing as far as they can go in both directions and then seeing where is it that I should be
heading. I feel kind of blessed because of the high school that I was allowed to attend.
You said you're a mathematical kind of person. Did you tell me?
Yes, I like mechanical things and math.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the high school we had all these extracurricular clubs. And I know my first day in freshman year, I saw the announcement that the science club would be meeting such and such time. So I go in the room, and there's not a girl in the room. It's all men, or boys. And the instructor comes in, it's a male. And he looked at me and said, what are you doing here? I said, wasn't this where the science club's meeting?
We don't have girls in our science club.
And I said, well, I want to be in science club. He said, we'll be down to the office and talk to them. So I went down there and I made it known that I thought the girls should be allowed to do the science club. Well, we don't think we're going to let you do that, but you can start your own. I come back 2 weeks later with the charter all written out, everything that we needed to set this club. And they put the announcement out. I bet there were 15 girls that I could do that for, and it was a big high school that showed up for this club. And we just had a church.
Well, my daughter was in the 7th grade. All the girls had to take home ec, and all the boys had to take shop. And it was that way when I was a child, but it never occurred to me. Never occurred to me to take shop. Because my father had, you know, that kind of a business, and I could do that kind of stuff, and it, you know, didn't interest me. But she was interested in that kind of thing. She wanted to be an architect when she grew up, and she thought maybe that would help her with the little grass and stuff. And so she went to the principal, and she said that she would rather take shop than home ec, because her mother taught her how to cook, and so she would need that. And it would be just really sweet. Serious? We can't do this. She's got a petition. And all the girls signed it because they all thought this would be fun. I don't know if they really wanted to, but she thought it would be fun. And she got to take shop, and so did everybody else in that school, and everybody since then. They had to take both. They had to submit.
Yeah, the boys had to take home that.
The boys had to
take home. The number one didn't like
Well, one of the difficulties that we get into, I think, in families that are more concerned with having their individual children go in the direction that seems best for that individual child, is that you can't make that kind of decision all by yourself. You can't follow through in every area all by yourself. And in those communities where the school system is agreeable to making some changes, okay, you know, you have that kind of external support. But that's not true everywhere, and it's certainly not true among all the classes. Studies about families from different economic backgrounds show that middle and upper middle class families where parents either are more educated or they're interested in education themselves are more likely to be the ones that feel children should not be narrowly pushed in some direction. Working class families that don't have as much background or interest in education are much more likely to see the value of having their children geared to be either fulfilling traditional male roles or traditional female roles. So society as a whole doesn't have one pattern right now to follow. And it's very difficult for a working class family who, let's say the father feels that if his boy shows an interest in certain kinds of things, he's a sissy. In his world, that's going to be a problem for him. You know, the father sees that as a problem. If that boy comes home from school where he's encouraged or required to take a cooking class, that is a real problem for that family.
And since kids react to peers so much, if you're in a peer group where showing any quote female tendency doesn't mark you as a sissy, that can overwhelm what your parents say, what the school says, what anybody else does. It really makes a difference
mm-hmm.
child who you're playing with and how they look at home.
My son, our son, who is 16, has grown up in a household where he was not pushed in one direction or another, and yet he has a very traditional ideas about what's a boy and what's a girl. He's the one we have two daughters and a son. The son is the one who used to call me up and ask if he could bake a cake before I came home from work or stuff like that. He's the one who's interested in cooking because he's interested in eating. But in other ways, you know, he had very peculiar, I thought, ways of expressing what is appropriate for boys and what isn't, and a lot of this had to do with the friends that he hung around with. And he has always, just for years, abhorred the idea of anything pink coming close to him. Article of clothing, picture on the wall, anything. Well, this spring, I'm glad he's not around here, this spring, he had his first date, which was to the junior-senior prom. And in our school, it is traditional for the boy who dresses up in a tuxedo to get a tux with a tie and a cummerbund in the same color as the girl's dress. So he wore pink for the first time in his life, and that was just fine. Love can do strange things.
He didn't say anything, either you or Jim. Did you just keep your mouth?
I commented. Yes.
Well, when my kids were young, my boys were young, I thought short pants were cute and the same for little boys. And so my boys wore short pants until they went to school. And they immediately then wanted long pants. And now both of them don't like short. And I think it's because they never saw their dad in shorts. I mean, he always wore long pants. And they kind of stayed in that traditional role, rather than the way I kind of tried to bring them up in the short pants.
Mm-hmm.
But I do see men now, more men wearing short pants as not like a dress, but a type of being a little bit different than the traditional.
Mm-hmm.
Most men have a real thing about their legs. Their legs look
good. And women don't.
No, I like it.
In another area, I think both of my sons and my son-in-law are very good cooks,
mm-hmm.
and don't think that is a feminine role. So it's kind of funny, and their dad doesn't cook at all. I mean, he can put an egg in the microwave, but that's it. But, you know, so that's not strictly a, because I think it's feminine.
Did you know the highest paid to be a cook are men?
Yeah.
Well, on the other hand, I've got a grandson who's very masculine, so he can be masculine. Look forward to him. Pink bubble, but pink balloon, pink shirt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It depends on what area of the country, or maybe not area, but little pockets, maybe. When we moved from the east to the Midwest, it may just have been the school, it may just have been the makeup of that particular class. But my son had been playing the clarinet for like 3 years, and he was the best clarinetist in his band. And there were 3 boys and 2 girls in the band playing the clarinet. When he moved and went to a different school, there were no boys playing the clarinet. And there was no way that he was ever going to play that clarinet again. And that was the end of it. And he would not do anything. That broke my heart. But he still played football.
Well, unless there's anything else that we should say about childhood and adolescence, male-female stereotypes, let's move into then the adult world. And a little exercise that I give to my class, the class I teach about women, an assignment that I give them is to keep a journal, a little notebook, for a few weeks. And they are supposed to get pictures, or they can write a description of images that they have found about women in our culture, and in 4 categories. One category is advertising. One is radio, TV, film, that sort of thing. One is about popular literature, magazines, and novels, and so on. And the final one is music. Most of them pick pop songs because that's what they hear all the time. And then we discuss the kind of images that they have found. And some of them really go out to look for the negative images. And some of them really go out to look for the positive images. Most of them come with some examples of both types. It does give us the basis for a pretty productive discussion about the images of women, and I think you can do the same thing talking about the images of men that are portrayed in the media and so on. So I thought maybe we could do a little bit of that. What sorts of images come to your mind out of popular culture in our society? And the message that comes out of that to many people is that women really, the ideal woman really is one who's beautiful, thin, perfect features, and so on. Now, most of us don't measure up to that, but it does give a certain amount of pressure to women in our society to at least attempt in some ways to measure up to that. And you know, the United States, about, I think it's 60% of everyone in the United States is trying to diet at any given time. And half of those people are trying to lose 5 to 10 pounds. Now, 5 to 10 pounds is an aesthetic goal It is not usually related to health. And so there are those who think that this image that's presented in the popular culture leads to this kind of concern. And with some people, it's not just a concern, it's an obsession with the fact that I must do everything in my power to look like that.
On the other hand, the woman, the young woman, whatever depicted in the centerfold, may have some appeal, but I have a personal bias in that most models, to me, I mean, what are displaying fashion, are very asexual, in my eyes. They're very, they just have no appeal. In fact, if anything, they turn me off, the extra sort.
That's my reaction too, and I think the reaction of a lot of men. The models, the high fashion models, are not sexually attractive.
Not at all.
Now, if models are supposed to widen, because clothes are really directed toward women and men, I'm not sure why these kinds of models are used, because it's not mental.
I have a daughter that's a model, and it looks better than they are, as opposed to men.
You're showing off the clothes.
Oh. So the men are looking at the women, and the women are looking at the clothes.
They have to. But that hasn't always been in the model. You know, I mean, in my generation, you know, the models, and I wish them, that was okay. But now, it's, nothing.
Yeah, I always think that I grew up backwards. I mean, when I was an adolescent, I looked like my daughter, who barely is over 100 pounds. It's been a while. But the ideal at that time was Marilyn Monroe. Mm-hmm. Then when I got a little older and started to become a woman, the ideal was Twiggy.
But this image of women, being so skinny, is really has caused very great nutritional problems. Bulimia is an offshoot of it. So is anorexia nervosa. And if we hadn't accounted this kind of thing into their heads, they would be free of it. However, if our country weren't so affluent and provided all this food, the bullies couldn't eat like they do and get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In advertising, you ask what we think about, and I think one that affects me is when I see the magazines come a long way, baby. It shows all the different stages of where you come from, showing that this is you're really freed up to do anything you want to. Well, I think that for women is slimmer.
There really have been some changes in the images of women that are portrayed in advertising. There's more of a range, probably. Not all ads anymore show women as the happy housekeeper. Whereas
beautiful housekeeper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Way in the back.
Along those same lines, some of the advertising is for the beautiful wife, the efficient mother, the woman who can work, the one who can do everything. The one with the perfume, and you come home and you do all the things. And, that's beautiful, too, because it's like you can do all of this and look gorgeous.
And you really ought to be able to do all of it.
Exactly.
There's been some criticism on the new Betty Crocker that came out because she just looks like this total package, which isn't really the homemaker that Betty Crocker's always represented before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was the one that was the mopping the floor in a dress.
A long dress.
With heels.
You were going to say.
I was going to say about the same thing that it's just amazing what they expect women to do now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I haven't had children yet because I know I'm a perfectionist and there's no way that I can do all of that and come home and be such a nice wife. I don't do any of that and I still come home. Maybe that's why people are waiting to have children now, or maybe waiting even to get married, waiting for the perfect mate, because their mate is not the man with the briefcase and the three-piece suit. Mm-hmm. He's the man that's in college and still paying for college, maybe, for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. The stereotypes about men that come through are not always terrific either.
Mm-hmm. You know, on the positive side, I saw a terrific difference when I put on the girl on our TV. I don't watch a lot of TV, but this one really struck me because it was the boss telling the man, "This, we have a way to help you through your alcoholism." Mm-hmm. And it was advertising a hospital program. And I thought, gee, isn't that neat to have something positive come through it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But lots of times in advertising, the male image, he can be a real scruffy guy on a horse or working or something, and that's kind of macho. He doesn't necessarily have to have a three-piece suit on. Still, he's not looking good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if he is in that image, he better be macho. He better be strong and capable of.
Not a 98-pound weakling.
No. I don't know how many of you listen to rock music, or I like most rock music. I mean, that's a quirk of my personality, I think. I listen to it a lot. I also like country music, I like classical music, I like a little bit of everything. And for a while, I was watching MTV. Any of you get MTV in your home? Music television, where they show the videos of the songs. The videos, pictures that go along with the words don't necessarily portray the words. Sometimes they do. But I became interested in coming back to watching rock music and listening to it because of some of my students. There was a period of time in which I didn't pay any attention to that form of music. I was put off by the disc jockeys and the super hype, and I didn't think there was much melody and all those kinds of things. So I've been paying attention for a number of years. But when I started teaching, I began to realize that many of the students that I had who were very bright and articulate and who were interested in classical music also were affected by pop and rock music. And I became curious about that, so I started listening and watching it and began to see that there's something of value musically in a lot of what's portrayed. However, the pictures that go along with most of the videos are terrible portrayals of women. And so my class talks about this. I mean, this is the one aspect of these four categories that they all have down cold, because they watch those things all the time. And they've come to the conclusion, I think the last several times I taught this class, they all came to the same conclusion, that most pop rock music today is a product of young males, so that sex is number one priority, and the image of man as domineering is also a high ideal in that part of the culture. So the females, well, they talk about that, you know. I mean, that is a part of the culture right now. And if you're going to be with it, you have to know what the songs are. Mm-hmm.
But if you really feel like, you know, if I was a young woman and I saw that and I thought, you know, that's really putting young women down, why don't they organize and boycott that stuff, you know, instead of encouraging?
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why I include this in my class and talking about, because these are young people, most of them are young people who are beginning to mature in many other areas, and they're beginning to have the ability to separate themselves from the culture to some extent. But, you know, that's a little bit here and a little bit there. I mean, it's going to take a long time for it to spread out too much. But some of the women's magazines are doing more, too, to encourage women to look seriously at this kind of message that's coming across. I mean, in the videos, almost all of the guys who are portrayed are just ordinary people. I mean, there are a few guys who are really, really outstanding looking, and there are a few who are really strange looking, and most of them are just sort of ordinary. But almost all the females are beautiful. And almost all of them have no role at all except to be ornaments or to be victims. And that is...
Yeah, I mean, you think that we got changing roles, their images, men, female roles. Presumably the young people are those that are most sympathetic to it. Strikes me as odd that your stereotypes would occur in the stuff that's almost watched almost solely by young people. I mean,
it's
an audience. I mean, you can say about any type of culture that's male. I mean, I just don't understand why it would be there.
I still think there are a lot of young girls, women, that kind of like the caveman approach. Even though the girls maybe say they want to do some choosing too, I still think there are a lot of them that like that caveman style.
Who is that romantic guy, Rudolph Jones, you know? I mean, that image, I do believe, is still there. And one of the songs that I've seen on video is the guy singing, and he has four women around him just playing the drums, the guitar, and I think that women don't like that image, but
they do.
And it's kind of like when Rudolph came on, you know, he made it a big hit, and you know, he did absolutely carry the girl off into a, you know, I mean.
Then there's another aspect to it, and that is, I can ask my kids what they get out of watching these things. And, I mean, there are periods of time in which they would watch it 24 hours a day. I mean, we're going out the door, and somebody's got to wait for someone else. They turn on MTV, you know. I mean, it's so much a part of what they like to do. And so I say to them, what do you get out of that? Well, they do not think they are being influenced by those images. They don't know anything about George Herbert Mead, who says we are invariably influenced by the society around us. But they, and I notice this in my students too, when they start talking about it, it's like, oh gee, I didn't really realize that before. It's only when you sit down and really look at it, and you're trying to focus on women, then they start to say, oh yeah, that really is pretty disgusting. But they don't think it has influenced them along the way. And my kids think that I'm just being a real old ogre about this. Yeah, right. Mother talk doesn't count.
Do you think that a lot of times they focus more on the beats and the music and so on? Also, with listening to the words, you know, oftentimes the words to some of the songs are obnoxious. Don't know the words, but really their concentration is more on the beat and on the sound.
Yeah, I think that's true.
And sometimes they don't even realize,
even though the man the words memorized, they don't even realize how obnoxious some of the words are, unless you draw their attention, in which case then,
well, yeah, that's
those songs
are gross.
Maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, if you're watching those pictures, I always hold my kid for those pictures down and in here. And eventually it will come out somehow.
Yeah, that sounds
amazing. Yeah.
It was interesting because on MTV not that long ago, they had a survey for protecting themselves, showing that over half of the kids who listened didn't know the words. And they were kind of protecting themselves against the people who were claiming that these words were corrupting kids and all this thing. And a huge percentage did not even know the words, which was, I thought, very interesting. I mean, I think it was like 60 or 70%. So that was really interesting. That's not what they're into. Maybe it is simple love, but also it is a beat. What she said about the music, I think is true. I acquired a tape from my brother that was called Androgynous. And the music on this tape was great. And it wasn't until years later that I started to know it was, moaning and groaning and I realized how disgusting it is.
I've been at a workshop a couple times with this fella whose name is just completely escaping me, but he's from California. He's a Catholic priest, and he has a Christian rock program. And he approaches it from saying, you know, we're never going to get the rock away from the kids. Let's forget about it, because they love the beat, they love the sound, and we're just banging our heads against brick walls. But let's take the words and make them devotional. Mm-hmm. Take the direction that they're pointed, which, you know, most people assume is sexually oriented, and point them towards the Lord. And he says 90% of the rock songs that you can listen to, if you get kids to point them in that direction, changes the whole meaning and the whole direction of it, and can be really a neat experience. And he uses this, like with retreats with kids, this is where I experienced it with him, where he's taken a group of 400 kids and just completely, you know, engrossed them in the idea of, hey, this is a Christian message, mm-hmm. and what it's saying to you, and directed that way.
Yeah, Christian rock groups are becoming more
but
and more.
But this isn't Christian rock. He is taking the, you know.
The original?
Yeah. Mm. He is taking, you know, Madonna and all these other songs and turning them around. He's not trying, you know, to get people to listen to Christian rock. That's not his motivation. His motivation is to take the rock that everybody is listening to, but you change what the message is to you.
Uh-huh.
A lot of our old tunes. A mighty heart is our God. That's a bard's tune.
Well, Luther's song were all bard's tunes. The pianos or the organs were bar instruments. The guitars were the official church music. And Luther was the organ music.
Yes.
I think part of what concerns the people with the consider on this Christian rock music, I think it turns a lot of some people off because it seems to me we're taking the worship of our Lord and making it into a TV commercial and making it something sacred, like the blaring of a horn.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is another point of view that is prevalent. Tell me if you want to say something like that. Well, as adults in society, how do you adapt to the images that you see of males and females that you don't think are appropriate? How does it affect you? Do you measure yourself up against ads or stories or whatever? Or do you just forget about those things? Or
I think there's days when I do both. You know, I mean, someday I may be feel like they're blob and my hair's not clean, or I, you know, I don't feel like doing that, clean with my nails. And I look at that and say, oh, you can't be more opposite than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but other days I couldn't care less because I want myself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't discuss. And just try to avoid it as much as possible. You know, sort of look at the way things were 20 or 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Is it a matter of having in your own mind the image that you think is the right one or the presentable one, and thinking more about that? Or is it a matter of trying to adapt what you see around you?
I think one thing is you recognize that it's a fantasy world. Just like a little child knows that the Three Little Pigs are a story. I can look at an advertisement and say, you know, I'm doing that fantasy. Mm-hmm. It's not reality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sometimes I get real angry at ads when I write letters. And somebody's saying, I'm holding a station or choose to make me. But usually I just cut out a real offensive one and maybe present it to one of my classes, or just ignore it. Mm-hmm. Most of the time I just ignore it. Or I won't buy any things because I have a lot of stuff.
Yep. Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah. I think it is a matter of trying to find your own way, you know, what you want to do. But at the same time, I can't believe that some of that doesn't go in. I know it's not that good. You know, you don't want it to, but you see it everywhere. And so, I think it is kind of a struggle because you're trying to find your own way and what you want to be and not filter in the things that you see. And I think that is a difficult thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that there are times and situations in which the negative views influence society in such a way that it creates problems for individuals. I know a woman who decided after her children were all gone, living independent lives, that she wanted to go back to work. And she applied for several different positions and was always told very politely that the position had already been filled or whatever. And this was a fairly small community she was living in, and she found out from someone who found out from someone who found out from someone that all of these places really wanted a young, very attractive woman to fill a position because they thought it would be an enhancement for that business or whatever, and she just didn't fit that mode. So, you know, it's the negative images sometimes create difficulties.
Mm-hmm. Well, Tanya, you know, there are advertisements and there are ads for beautiful, mature women. Mm-hmm. And there's some of the big TV shows on TV shows now are over 35.
What?
No. But look at them. They're still the glitzy, glamorous, you know.
I don't deny that, but it's not saying that a woman over 35 is put on the deck of the rocking chair. That isn't, you know. And I feel as a single woman that, boy, I have the option, you know. I can be extremely feminine, or I can be extremely male.
Mm-hmm.
I have that freedom, and I feel I have to work that freedom.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you all very much for your participation. Those of you who are leaving, have a good life. Some of you, I hope, will still be here for a while. Okay. Yes, it is my duty to tell you, if you are not aware, that the road is being, at this very moment, paved, or whatever it is, the glob they put on it, and you are encouraged to walk across on the boards that have been laid, because the stuff will come off on your shoes. It is washable. Anyway, that's the word. And thank you very much for those of you who voted for the topics for next week.